podcast is part of the Sports Social Podcast Network.
Hello and welcome to Anfield Index episode 154. In the hosting chair, Marco Lopez, that's the guy you're listening to. With me, Rory Greenfield, Stuart Britson. I'm going to allow them to introduce themselves in a moment. What are we going to be talking about? Well, we're going to be talking about a couple of things. Up on the agenda, Liverpool versus Southampton, a quick recap. Just obviously take in some of the key observations from the game and some of the narratives emerging out of the match as they as we sort of lead into the final couple of matches of the season. And then quite an interesting topic. We're getting obviously close to the end of the season, which means that it starts becoming that all-important, we start explaining that all-important platitude of reflection. Reflection on the season, reflection on what happened and what should happen and what should have happened and all those good things. And that's pretty much what we're going to be doing in some portion today, more on that a bit later. But first, let me introduce my two colleagues, Rory and Stu, who, of course, well, for their sins, can't seem to get rid of me, given how many times I've been on their show, The Comic Pod, which sadly for them is one of my favorites in the Anfield Index stable. Rory, how are you, sir?
I'm good. I'm quite cathartic. Morning on Twitter, you know, venting and fuming and purring a few questions. So I feel a little bit better about things after a day on from that match, which, yeah, it sent me into a very, very vicious cycle about Liverpool, which the last few weeks have kind of reared their ugly head again. But we're close to the finish line. I think we all need it.
That's interesting because, Stu, I was going to say about Rory while you introduce yourself, I almost didn't recognize him this morning. From the exchanges he was having on social media. What do you think, Stu? And hello, by the way.
I thought I'd managed to send these messages from his account. Because I'm the one that makes all the stupid comments. You know, you're supposed to be the level-headed one.
Well, angry, not stupid. Okay.
I'm fucking Fumino. Yeah, you are Fumino. From my perspective, I'm just a bit... I think questions do need to be asked. You know, I think we are playing a certain brand of football that we're not expecting to play under Klopp, and then it's a bit of a shock to the system when we, I don't know, approach a game in that fashion, which we've done in the last few weeks, because I think we all see it as vital that we get 3 points, whereas I don't know, Klopp doesn't seem to be thinking the way that we are, which I think, and there's a lot to talk about obviously, but I think the main point for me is that when Klopp came in early doors and kind of first 6 months or so, he was playing the way that I think he plays the way supporters expected him to play and wanted him to play. And I think whenever he changes from that system and you start to think he's doubting himself and he's doubting his approach, and I don't know, that's what's concerning me anyway. So I asked a few questions around that kind of narrative and got some pretty interesting response, some fair debate on Twitter, which is a very rare.
That's very rare.
That is very rare.
Yeah, exactly. Normally you come in and trump it with some...
Normally I just call someone a cunt and that's it. But
yeah, that's exactly what I was...
There we go. He had to go and already mark up the explicit rating for the show. Anyway,
I may as well do it now. Get it out of the way.
First one's free. I will be very clear. I'm going to try and avoid any comic book material references in this podcast because we have to talk about the serious business of Liverpool. So no Negan wedding. Anyway, Liverpool versus Southampton. Stu, let me start with you first. Can you give me a highlight, a lowlight, and a lesson from this fixture?
Okay, I'm really going to struggle to give you a highlight. Really genuinely going to struggle to give you a highlight. I suppose if you want to be... It's something I'm not accustomed to, but if you wanted to be, I think it's called optimistic, like speaking Turkish to me. The defense, when pressed, generally looked okay. But that said, we weren't really pressed that much. It's really hard when a team plays nine men behind the ball and just leaves Gabbiadini on the halfway line. a couple of the players who you expect to play shit played okay. Lucas played all right. Lovren didn't do a damn thing wrong. But again, neither of them were really pushed. It was good to see Sturridge back in the first team, but he's nowhere near as quick as we need him to be. A low light, unsurprisingly, the score. It's just another game when we seem to... We've got one way of playing, and it's wonderful when it works, but when it doesn't work, it's abject, you know, that we've got nothing. And I don't believe it's just because we miss Mane, because one player cannot be that central to the entire team. I just don't think we've got any clue how to break down teams. And I don't know whether it's something that Klopp's never come across in Germany. I don't know if anyone in the Bundesliga does that, where they don't try to win a game. They literally just defend. But it's something he's going to have to come to terms with, because how many times has it happened this season when teams come to us and everyone goes, oh, well, if we just sit back, we can pick them off later, and it works.
Yeah. I have to say, I echo a lot of that. Rory, I would imagine that you're going to echo a lot of it as well, although I'm curious what you think about the... I don't open up a can of worms, but I'm curious what you think about the Sturridge shot. But and also in respect to some of the, as Stu was saying, some of the other players who you wouldn't have expected to put in the good shift, but actually ended up doing so.
I think Liverpool's defence as a rule is really hard to judge, because when they come under no pressure, you know, players like Matip actually play pretty well, because he can dominate aerially, he's got good control, and when he's you know, one striker against two centre backs, he's invariably going to come out on top, and he does that well, and he drives forward with the ball, and it makes him look exceptionally good. But I think even Matip, much like Lovren, put under any kind of pressure, any kind of strain, they do both struggle. It's not just Lovren, and Matip might not play the kind of errors that Lovren does, but he's still not always as strong, not always as positionally sound. So I think as a rule, I'm not gonna judge those kind of players, really. Lucas has had a mild resurgence, albeit I think it feels like, oh God, I can't say it because he probably won't leave, but it feels like a last hurrah kind of thing. You know, it feels like this is it. I just don't know. I just can't really judge, because I think Klopp likes him being around, but one thing I do think it does is have a slightly negative impact on our other midfielders. I think the balance is much better when it's Chan and Wijnaldum and Lallana, or
totally agree.
Edison and Lallana, yeah, and Wijnaldum. I think Lucas, because he's a lot deeper, he does play quite incisive passes on occasion.
All of a sudden, actually,
he's almost... The big can of worms, a big talking point, which I think they're going to talk a lot on under pressure, is about Wijnaldum and his lack of touches, lack of involvement. But it does seem since Lucas came into the team and the balance shifted, I think Wijnaldum's role isn't quite perfect for him, and it doesn't suit him. And Emre, although he's had a, you know, couple of incredible games, probably been our best player since Shonry, even in that game, you know, we didn't get on the ball as much, couldn't, you know, Southampton are like our kryptonite. They really are good at defending in the spaces that we want to play in, and Coutinho was far too deep, and there's just, it wasn't the right balance. It changed a little in the second half at times. Lallana does make a bit of a positive impact at times, but I think he's still not fully fit, and it'll take him some time to get back to fitness. The positive, just a player that never gets much mention, Marco Grujic, four or 5 minutes, which is not enough. I love the composure. I think he plays with his head up a lot. He obviously had that headed chance, which could have snatched us the game. But he just looks, I mean, he's had a lot of problems with, you know, fitness this year, and I still think there's a player in there next year that... He's got the physical attributes to dominate in the league, but I think he's got a lot more about him footballing-wise, which I think we only saw in pre-season, but he's still got a lot of quality, and I think he could be something quite special. I know it's early days, but I think he's got enough about him to show some good signs. The big low light for me, I'm sick of our fullbacks. I just think in a game like that,
we'll get to him. I mean, you know, I'm not gonna
slate Milner for the penalty miss. It was quite a good save, and at the end of the day, you know, Milner can be hung, drawn, and quartered from all angles, but he's not the one that picks himself to play there. He really isn't a central midfielder. He's not left back. He's a kind of right midfielder, you know, that links up quite well in the final third and has a relatively decent cross from the right-hand side of the pitch. He's not a left-footed player. He offers no balance, no real width. The one time we got behind their defence was when Lallana played a nice through ball, which is quite rare, but he played a nice through ball to Milner and the cutback was deflected out for a corner. And it's just... Yeah. It's frustrating, and as you know, Moreno would do better in that position, but Klopp clearly doesn't trust him defensively. I think Milner is pretty average defensively, but he's not prone to very big errors. I think he's prone to a few lapses, but nothing like catastrophic. But I just think him and Klein on the other side just offer nothing in the final third. And if we haven't got a winger like Mane, who, although he does play quite narrow, still will stretch the play and use his acceleration, we've got no one who overlaps. We've got no one who utilises the space that's there. And I just think it's more and more apparent that our fullbacks against a stubborn defence, against a deep defence, are just woeful, really, in attack. They just have no clue, except Milner's dreadful cutting back in and then crossing on his right foot. And that's all he knows. I mean, how do you teach an old dog new tricks? And, you know, Klein ain't great shakes either. I just don't... I think why Klopp's maybe looking at younger fullbacks is to mould them, but another season of Milner at left-back is...
Well, we can't do it. We absolutely can't go into next season with Milner. One thing I'd like to add in there, on there, I mean, I've said several times, I'm a big Gruitch fan. When he comes on, he's one of the only players on the pitch who doesn't wuss out of tackles. I mean, Firmino is so, so guilty of it. There'll be a 50-50 ball and he shapes as if he's going to go in for it. And then right at the last second, he backs out.
Which is weird for Firmino as well, isn't it? Because he's the one that's probably one of our most defensively sound players winning the ball back. And
the press as well.
I don't get that.
But only when it's on his, only when it's on his terms. If it's a 75 or 25, he'll go for it. Whereas Gruitch sees a ball and he goes, you know what, I'm fucking having this.
It was interesting.
Interesting at the start of the season when Gruitch was injured. There was an interview with Klopp and they asked him and he said, well, what kind of player is he? And he said, to be honest, he's neither one nor the other. This is what we've got to do. He's got all the ability. He can be whatever kind of midfielder we want him to be. He can either sit deep, he can be an attacker, or he can be a box-to-box runner. We've just got to pick one and mould him. And I'm hoping he might be a long-term answer to a holding midfielder because he's big, he's strong, he's quick, as you said.
He can pass the ball very much
with his head up. And that's what you need. It's what Mascherano had. It's what Busquets has. As soon as he's tackled, his head's up and they're looking around, who can I give this to? And we don't have that vision at the back anymore.
Yeah, maybe there's a chance of let me sort of pose a parting shot, which everyone will shoot me for. Maybe turn him into a latter day red version of Nemanja Matic. How's that?
He's got a bit of Matic about him. He's certainly got that kind of tall, graceful, but it is the physique.
That build, don't you? If you're going to be in a defensive position like that, you don't really want. That again, to contradict that, that's why Mascherano was a bit of a misnomer because he was 4.5 foot tall and built like a wet paper bag. But normally, I mean, Matic is huge. He's like a wardrobe.
Yeah.
And Gruitch looks the same. He looks like if he runs at you and you stand in the way, you're getting knocked down.
I think Gruitch, I think he probably could have been an extra in like the film 300. I think he's got that kind of.
The rest of them look like midgets.
Let's be clear. I would not like to bump into Evan Mascherano and a Dark Alley anytime soon either. So,
I'd give him my house keys and everything.
there you go. Prove my point. Okay, guys, let me just quickly bring it back to one of the key narratives because a few things came out of the match. Very quick discussion on Milner. I'll let Stu handle this.
We'll see bombs incoming.
No. You've got.
I'm going to try to not say it anymore. I've said it once.
All I want you to pose, Stu, in your opinion, because this is the big debate. I much like Rory said earlier, I wasn't about to sort of, you know, lambaste on him for the missed penalty. I think his penalty record's been pretty damn good. Penalties don't score themselves, and I hate to say it. He was due one, right? I think
sadly he was.
Yeah, I think the idea of sort of this pressure idea of you know, that's the only chance that Liverpool have to win the game is almost a bit revisionist. I think what was interesting is immediately off the back of that, quite a few people who I didn't expect on social media to do this suddenly started questioning his inherent value, saying, well, if he's not going to put a penalty away, what is he doing in the team? So, Stuart Britson, what is he doing in the team? What is his value?
Absolutely fuck all for me.
No, come on.
I don't see the point. I think it worked at the beginning. It was an experiment.
I think he was fine for 3 months.
He was. For the first few months of the season, he was arguably one of the best fullbacks in the country. He was doing an absolutely brilliant job, but he's gone off the boil, massively off the boil. And now I don't see how Moreno could possibly do any worse. And he's the scapegoat. There's people now taking the piss out of him because he was flipping a bottle when he was sat on the bench. The guy can't do anything right in some people's eyes. But at the end of the day, at least when he gets the ball in an attacking position, he doesn't have to switch it back onto his right foot. Every time Milner gets the ball, he loses between 3 and 5 seconds because he's got to steady himself and get it back on his right foot. We lose all the fluidity that we've got in the wide areas. And, you know, at least with Moreno, if someone rolls a ball out to him, you know, if Wijnaldum rolls a ball out to him or Jan, at least he can just put his foot on it. And he's actually got a pretty decent record, if I remember rightly, of creating chances.
I think he's a bit of a hit and hope kind of crosser. I mean, fires it in low and hard and that kind of... At times will,
but it's
will
better,
it.
Isn't it, than stopping and
well,
just.
Well, it's better with your left foot naturally. Do you know what I mean? It's because you don't have to check, and even if Milner tries to cross with his left foot, it's still going to be a floated, lofted cross. And what we've probably learned against these bigger sides is that Origi, for all the will and the one, and the poor kid gets lambasted every day now, despite being 22 and not eternally gifted, and not like we created him a single chance anyway. Do you know what I mean? So
no, he's feeding off scraps at the minute.
He's feeding off scraps, and he's playing in a system that doesn't fit in necessarily because he doesn't connect well with the two Brazilians. He doesn't know how to play that kind of football. He plays better from the wide positions where he can run the channels, all that kind of stuff. But he's terrible in the air, or at least he's terrible against strong centre-halves when there's two centre-halves and just him. He can't win those kind of battles, especially with crap floated crosses in. And Klein's just the same. And Klein's right-footed, but he doesn't overlap. He will cut back and then pass the safe five-yard pass.
Klein may as well be left-footed. He may as well be left-footed because he always cuts in anyway.
He cuts in or he tries to set the fullback on, but it's so predictable that he either wins a corner or he loses the ball because he just doesn't have that decisiveness about
him. He just knocks it past them, doesn't he? Knocks it closer to the line and then goes past them. And more often than not, left-backs or left-mids, they're happy to let him do it because he's not really... got a track record of getting past them and then whipping in a really fast deep cross to the back post. Like you said, it's a hit and hope. It's just, well, I've done my job, but
cutbacks always hit the first man as well. And the thing is, let's be honest, I mean, it is hard playing against a packed defense of 9 players in their own half. We're not going to have a lot of space to operate with, but that's when you need a bit of guile and a bit of creativity and a bit of nous. And I think outside of Coutinho and Firmino, when he's in the central area, on occasions Lallana, certainly Sturridge when he's on the pitch, but why he isn't is probably a very big pod in itself. And it's something I don't know if we fully know the reasons why anyway, I'll be honest. But I don't think we've got a lot of guile in there. Emery's got a bit as well to an extent. but Wijnaldum doesn't. You know, I think, you know, Mane certainly does. But I think what we're lacking, and I think I keep coming back to this, as much as I keep thinking it's not personnel, it's tactics and approach and everything, a lot of our squad is still pretty average. And a lot of it's run its course. What I hoped for this year, some of it has happened, but not a lot of it has. Whereas maybe the players we signed have been pretty impressive on the most part, Mane and Wijnaldum and Matip. But the lesser signings, or the some of the younger players from last year, or the players that I expected maybe made a bit more of an impact, like Shea Yeojo, who had a really good run in last year and has not got a sniff this year. Maybe Wilson, who's scored a ridiculous amount of goals for the under-23s, but not really got a kick. And there's a couple of others, and you just thought maybe someone would kind of grab that place in Mane's absence, but it's no one's really emerged, and it's kind of there where we lacked a signing or two, or there where our depth is just non-existent. Our benches in recent weeks, you know, I think we were having a debate earlier, but I wonder whether with a Klopp bench you're just picking people to sit there. I don't. He doesn't use his substitutes. He doesn't trust his squad. He likes to stick with the game plan he's gone into a match with. And I don't always think he trusts that bringing a player off the bench will make a telling difference, which, yeah, it's difficult to watch because we're all getting frustrated by it. But I don't know, that it's his choice as manager, you know. We can't do anything about that. So until he maybe gets the stronger squad and starts rotating players, the only time I think we've seen him make a positive move off the bench was Firmino and Coutinho against... Who did we beat 2-1? Was it West Brom?
It was Stoke.
Stoke half-time, okay. And they came on.
Yeah, we were doing absolutely nothing, and then he brought them on and just completely changed.
But again, you're never going to be in a position very often to bring on two players of that calibre, two of our best players. So if we've got the odd one we can bring on of that level, then maybe we'll see more. But I just don't know. I just don't know why he doesn't trust to really... play any of these players off the bench from 60 minutes, 55.
It's
none of that. It's all from 75, 80 minutes, 85 minutes. It's crazy.
It's a weird situation because, I mean, I'm not necessarily going to dispute that Liverpool doesn't have the financial prowess to afford a good bench, but it's not like, you know, it's not like you're staring at Real Madrid and like, oh, okay, well, clearly Hummus is not working out. Let me bring on Isco instead. And meanwhile, both of those players on the fringes, you know? Rory, I'd like to then take some of that commentary that you just threw out, and not necessarily exactly what you conversed on social media earlier today, but it is an angle that I wanted to pose, because it's another narrative that came out of it. Because a lot of people after the Southampton game, so this, of course, the Southampton game occurred before the kickoff between, fun enough, Arsenal and Manchester United, who, fun enough as well, at that point, knew that there was a slight possibility of suddenly having the math back in their control in respect of catching Liverpool. The key concern being Manchester United, who, if they'd won all their game in hand, at that point would have obviously then, you know, gone past Liverpool. As it turns out, Arsenal did something unusual. They won. And what ended up happening is that, Liverpool got away with it. Let's put it that way. So here's my question, Rory. Do we accept the result, the 0-0 result? Are we happy with it because Liverpool got away with it?
It's a difficult one. I think you have to put it in context of the Palace result a little bit. I think I saw someone post our last 10 games, and I think we won 6, drawn 3, lost 1.
Brent. I think it was Cosy, wasn't
it? It was Brent. Brent from
Yeah. And so comparing that to Arsenal, I think it's 5 wins and United maybe 5 wins.
Everyone else at 19 points, Liverpool at 21.
Yeah, and you know, at the end of the day, I think what Liverpool are suffering from is this anxiety playing at home. I mean, I don't think I'm amazed we've got 6 points or 9 points against Watford, Stoke and West Brom, to be honest, because we scraped those wins. But I genuinely think we deserved them, but they were still very tight and quite nervy and quite edgy. I would have liked to see us go for it at home and you know, be a bit more adventurous and do what Liverpool do. But maybe Klopp's just gone I don't know. I think January took its toll. And people will say, well, you know, Klopp believes in his own methods and Klopp's, you know, completely infallible and he's stubborn and pig-headed and he won't change his approach, he won't change anything about his game. He played this way at Mainz, played this way at Dortmund. I think he may have just decided that he doesn't want to concede 50-plus goals in this season. And he realises, after Palace in particular, and probably Bournemouth, and Bournemouth the time before and any other time we've randomly got spanked by a lower seven club in the league, that perhaps it's wise to not overexpose ourselves, because we can't defend a counter-attack particularly well. I don't think we've got centre-backs to play that way. Our full-backs don't really have the pace or recovery pace to play that way, and they are trying to push forward, albeit failing at times to make an impact. We don't have a natural defensive midfielder like Wanyama, like Matic, like Kante, who isn't necessarily a defensive midfielder, but at least has those energy in his legs, like a Mascherano type, who will, you know, who will block the runs and block the, you know, kind of nous about them. All the best teams tend to have a bastard in midfield that will know when it's right to take a yellow card, you know, tactical foul or something intelligent about the game. It's a natural thing for them. And our centre-backs would do the same, you know, get away with a yellow when they're not necessarily 1v1, but, you know, in that position. Whereas we would probably try and do the, you know, the right thing by controlling the ball and doing the smart thing and doing something over elaborate, which our defence centre backs are known for, and making a mistake. I don't think we're intelligent enough as a team. I don't think we've got intelligent enough players to control a game properly. I think some players in the squad do, but I still think we're lacking, and that's not leadership, it's quality for me. And it's difficult. So Klopp's tried to adjust. He's tried to make things compact. That's a massive sacrifice to any attacking impetus we've got. And I don't think we can go into the final two games playing that way and hoping to scrape a result, because we need to show some intent. But I think, in fairness, the position in the league, we've got the points on the board. I'm still confident we'll get top four. We are falling over the finish line. It's not comfortable. It's not enjoyable to watch. It's not a nice feeling watching Liverpool play anymore. And I find that quite hard, because I think last time I was on the main pod, we talked about style over substance a little bit. We talked about results over ways of playing. And, you know, Chelsea are winning the league comfortably. And they've played quite defensive football at times, but they've got the personnel, they've got the manager, they've got that style. Yeah. Can Liverpool really get away with it with the players they've got and the manager they've got? Because Klopp isn't a defensive manager. It's clearly obvious. But I guess without a full attack, full flow attack and balanced midfield, are we good enough to, you know, outscore an opponent? Is it too big a risk? Is it right for Klopp to basically shut up shop? If we started playing this way next year, if you remember the way Rodgers, you know, after we'd failed to win the league that year, suddenly kind of tried to change his approach, even though I thought we had a fairly successful formula, and bought the wrong players to play the way we'd played the season before. If we did that under Klopp, I would have massive, massive concerns, because we blew away Watford 6-1 early in the season. We were playing football that I've not seen us play for so, so long, and teams just couldn't live with us. And it wasn't just Mane, and it wasn't just Coutinho and Firmino. It was everything. Everything clicked. And we had a balance to the team that I've not seen before for a long, long time, since the Suarez kind of, when it really clicked under Suarez and Sturridge and Sterling. But then going back, it's a long way back before then. I just worry we're not going to get back to that again. And Klopp's slightly adjusted the way he wants to play, and maybe buys players to suit a different way, to suit the Premier League rather than suit him. And although that's good in principle, I just don't think Klopp's the man that can change his style and system and tactics. I think he has to play full throttle, heavy metal football to win things. I think that's the way he does it. And Liverpool fans you know, we eat into that. We're eating out of the palm of his hands in November, December, and now we're starting to question his methods and his tactics and approach. It's not a nice place to be in. I'm slightly uncomfortable by it all, I'll be honest.
Well, all that, apart from being...
Yeah, sorry, that was a lot.
No. A great, eloquent speech which actually segues beautifully into what I'm about to ask both of you to talk about. So let's close the book now on Liverpool and Southampton. All I'm going to say is that so my last word on the topic is just notwithstanding the optimism around some of the performances, and yes, for example, you mentioned Brent's tweet around that particular record. I look at it in context. I say, fair enough, you know, fine, 21 points over the rivals, 19. We didn't start at zero, all of us. Liverpool had some games and had concerns with games in hand, so that's obviously one issue. The other thing for me is, I don't think it's acceptable that the last victory at home was on April Fool's Day. It really, really, really is just not cool. The last three home matches, no wins, which is just, you know, at the business end of the season, a lot of people are talking about how pleasant the run-in is. Well, that's not been maximized, has it? Nonetheless, let's talk a little bit about what you said, Rory, because it does set up nicely into trying to look at what next season should be like. It seems a bit weird because obviously this season hasn't finished, but I do want to reflect on a few things, because what effectively I wanted to do is talk speculatively about some target setting for next season with this season in mind. Because I would think, funny enough, even though some people might say, no, you can't do this because we don't know if we 100% guarantee for Champions League, I actually was thinking about it, and I don't think what Liverpool needs to do next season changes just because they're in the Champions League or not. In fact, I'd argue that if they are in the Champions League, it further exacerbates what they do need to do, because well, guess what? It's not like some of us aren't going to suddenly expect the team to do well in the Champions League as well as in its league form to maintain its presence in the Champions League. So, what I'm going to do is, we're going to do this all very scientific-like. So I'm going to use nice, big, intelligent words like quantitative and qualitative, so that one day I can, when I'm big, I can get invited on the AI Under Pressure podcast.
Lost me and Stu there, by the way. Words are not allowed.
There we go. Okay, so
you lost me at words.
At words. the quantitative goals, gentlemen, I'm going to throw at you is, I'm basically going to be very, very simplistic and say, if you're looking at target setting for next season, and Stu, let's start with you, what would you say? Give me three big targets. Give me a target for points. Give me a target for league position. Give me a target for trophies, if at all. In respect of what you think Liverpool should be targeting for next season, given the current season in context.
Okay. Notwithstanding the fact that we don't know where we're going to finish in the league, up until Christmas, we were in a credible league title. We were in the hunt. We might limp across the line. If we don't make fourth, we will be bloody close to it. So, position-wise, next season has to be third or above, because every year we've got to be seen to be improving on the previous year. So I think we've got to be looking at third or above. We want to be looking at, points-wise, I would say mid-70s.
Mm-hmm.
Mid-70s, maybe even up to 80. We've got to be looking at what Spurs have done this season and saying, right, well, they should realistically kick on next year, and they'll be looking at sort of mid to late 80s. So we've got to make up that ground and sort of say late 70s, early 80s. Cups, it's hard to say, because I wouldn't, as much as it's nice to win trophies, I would like us to consolidate a place in the Champions League, because as we've seen with Brendan a couple of years ago, getting in the Champions League once, not having any impact and getting knocked out, it makes no impact whatsoever. That we need the lasting impact that you get of the extra money, the extra prestige that comes with it, because that's how we can then attract better players. If we were to have any kind of cup success, I would rather see us get in the Champions League and get to the knockouts, because that's when we can start making a name for ourselves and show people that maybe we aren't as shit as people think we are.
Yeah, that's fair. Rory, what would your sort of idea on those targets be? Points, trophies, and just as Stuart said, which is quite interesting, this idea of trying to improve. Or do you think it's a case, if Liverpool does similar to what they've done this season, it's progress?
It may be progress. It depends on how the season goes, and it also depends on the teams we beat next year, because I think we might not do as successfully against the top six next year if they have improved. I don't think City under Guardiola, I think they'll improve further. I think they'll spend a lot on their defence, which changes them a lot. I think United may find a way of scoring goals in these big games, but Mourinho has never been one for that. And I think, you know, Conte and Tottenham's, you know, and Arsenal, I think they're going to stick with Wenger, so I don't see that changing. But, you know, arguably all the teams will improve one way or another, and Arsenal may then make a decision if they don't improve to change things. And I think we're a little bit ahead of the curve then. I would like to be... I think we'll finish top four, and I want to get out of the group stages. I want to be in those, you know, in those knockout, positions. I think a quarter final would be an achievement if we got that far. And then you never know, as you know, we've seen under Liverpool over the years. But a quarter final would be big, because there's some good sides in the Champions League, you know, and Spanish are great at the minute, and some of the Italian sides are coming strong again, and I think Napoli will be good next year, as well as, you know, as well as Juventus, and I think Germans will get a bit stronger again at some point. So it's going to be interesting next year. I would want us to, it's all about, like Stu said, sustainable development. I think we need to consolidate but improve. So I'd like to be hitting 80 points. I'd like to be getting top three. And I'm not bothered about the League Cups next year. Silverware is important in one regard, because I think Klopp's lost his last three or four finals, I think, and I think he's a bit of a monkey on our backs. I think he's a bit of a monkey on his back. I think he'd be nice as a club. You know, if it was the League Cup without expending all of our better players in it, do you know what I mean? If it is playing maybe a second team or some of the younger players, and we won that, I think that's quite a nice time to win it, because you win it quite early in the season, really. You win it in March, don't you?
Feb,
it's crazy. Maybe get the wind in your sails a bit of a taste of what it feels like to pick up a trophy, you know, at Wembley and stuff. That'd be quite nice for the players. I think that might be a good morale boost towards the end of the season. But I'm not really that arsed. For me, if we get top four this year, we have to stay top four next year. And we have to, like Stu said, not be soft and go out in the group stages. Even if we're in the group of death, we just have to beg, borrow, steal our way through it, because it was embarrassing. You know, the team we put out at the Bernabeu, the performances we had against Bale and I can't remember.
Ludogorets.
I can't imagine that again. But Klopp wouldn't do that. I mean, Klopp is quite well made for Europe. You know, he's shown that last year. So, yeah, it'd be nice to be back there again, you know. It'd be nice to see Anfield under floodlights against that calibre of team, because we loved it last year. I remember coming on your pod with Stu last time, I think we talked football on the pod, you know, Villarreal, I think we came on and talked about, and that's just over a year ago. And the calibre of sides we were playing, you know, United are a bit shit, but other than that, you've got Dortmund and you've got Villarreal and Sevilla in the final. That's much harder than it is this year, let's put it that way. And it felt a bit like a taster at Champions League, and it was quite gutting to miss out this year. But I think we've hopefully smoothed out a few of the issues. I think if we do get Champions League, we'll actually hopefully spend some bloody money on the right kind of players. And maybe we'd have to spend a bit more than we want this year, but the market's going that way anyway. But then, as Stu said, maybe you can start to attract them and put a name for yourself back on the map a bit, you know. And Klopp is a pull, but, you know, and maybe playing with Mane and Firmino and Coutinho to some would be a little bit appealing, but at the same instance, I don't know, do you want to be a defender and come in and try and patch up our mess? Do you know what I mean? Because there's a lot of weight on Van Dijk or whoever the hell he targets shoulders, you know. And same in midfield, you want maybe someone who's ambitious. I want ambitious players who want to propel the club forward and want to make us stronger again, rather than just being ones that want to come along for the ride, because you don't get that under Klopp, do you? You come in and you have to work your nuts off. And I don't think all players want to do that, but maybe the ones that do are the right kind of players. You know, Mane in particular was a great sign of that. He wanted to come in and play for Klopp, and I think he'd proven that. And I think more players of that calibre would be very important for us. Yeah.
So I think let's consolidate the three ideas, because funny enough, I'm not misaligned to you guys. I do think the only thing more important than getting into the Champions League this season is making sure you get in there again. I have a bit of a weird take on this. I don't think Liverpool are going to compete for the top three next season. I think it would be a hell of an achievement, because I fully expect Chelsea to be as strong, if not stronger. I fully expect Manchester City to get much stronger. I fully expect United to be very offended by the idea of finishing outside the top four, and spend more stupid money to make sure they get in there, particularly if they, you know, if the rumours are true about people like Griezmann and Bernard Silva. So if that's the case, the interesting thing, I do expect Spurs to be raided and Arsenal to remain their plucky selves at the moment, which means there's a unique situation for Liverpool to be pretty consolidative of top four. So with that in mind, Stu, I'm going to give you the weird conundrum, because what Rory described earlier about, you know, Klopp's game idea, we can't. I think it would be a little bit surprising if we suddenly saw Jurgen Klopp, you know, adapt to a style employed by the likes of Antonio Conte or Massimiliano Allegri, where the team is far more compact and far more prudent in the way that it defends teams. So I guess the question I'm going to ask you is, how would you deal with the qualitative measure? And I'll explain what that means shortly, but If now you're saying you want to achieve all these cool things of top four and so forth, but you know this team is going to concede goals, most likely in the league campaign, still 40 or more, what would you do from a defensive side? And think about it and really think about it in terms of targets. So what targets would you set around defense? Would you set, okay, this team has got to get certain kind of defenders, or this team has got to focus on set pieces, or this team has got to, you know, just sort of set some very sort of soft targets around the kind of things you'd want to see in defense for next season?
Oof, well, I think you've mentioned a couple of them there. We certainly need personnel changes. As Rory mentioned before, we've got fullbacks are our major source of width, especially without Mane, and they don't really offer any width. So we need fullbacks that can overlap and can deliver. We need a good centre-half partner for Matip, who's more composed and doesn't need his hand-holding in the way that Lovren does and that Skrtel did. And we've got to get some kind of midfield cover. But we also have to find a way of defending set pieces, because we don't seem to concede a great number of chances. We don't let teams have 10, 15, 20 shots against us and concede one or two. We let teams have one shot against us and we concede that one every time. You know, there was a stat at the start of the season. It was something like 7 or 8 shots that Mignolet had taken. You know, 7 or 8 games, sorry, where he only had one shot against him and every one was a goal. That can't be normal. You know, we've got to be able to cut out the easy mistakes. And it might be that Klopp might have to change his style, as Rory was just saying. Maybe it's not something he's accustomed to, but he might need a really hard, long look at himself and say, look, the style of football I've been accustomed to isn't going to work in this country. And that would be a big, big learning curve for him if he has to do that. But we will never mount a real title threat if we continue conceding 40-plus goals a season. You look at when we nearly won it under Brendan. We were on par to break the record for the number of goals conceded for a title winning side. And even if we'd won the league, that would have been a bit of a smudge on it. You don't want to be known as the team that won the league with the shittest defence. You know, it's like Leicester don't want to be known as the team that won the league and then had the limpest title defence the year after.
In fairness, mate, I won't give a fuck if we won the league. I don't care how we do it. Even if we had a negative goal.
I would. Because I want us to do it in style. I want us to do it in some style. I want us to be... I don't want us to just limp. I want us to win and deserve to win it and to be proud of it and what have you. And
no, I get you. Do you know what? I heard it a little bit this year. Just to put it out there. I think like towards the end of the season, it's... Our form September to December was electric. It was incredible. But I wanted to finish the season strongly. You know, if you're limping over the line, which we're like a wounded soldier, literally crawling, one of our legs blown off, kind of, you know, just veering towards that.
We're like a marathon runner, aren't we? We gave our all in the first 10, 15 miles.
Yeah.
And now we've got cramp everywhere, even in our eyelids.
We're walking
to a finish line just covered in our own shit and just praying that our legs don't fall off.
To use a reference, you guys are both like, this is a bit like that fight between Matt Murdock and that guy from The Hand, who I can't remember. But the one which leaves him sort of needing a fair amount of attention from Claire Temple.
Yes.
Stu, but hold on, yes. hold on. Let's just be clear, right? I mean, I just don't see Jurgen Klopp changing his style. So my question is, if Jurgen Klopp doesn't change his style, how do you get closer to 40 goals or less?
Then it has to be we put all of our eggs in terms of transfers into defence. We forego the fact that we need forwards, and we maybe have to say, right, we're going to give Sturridge another year, because I think we need at least three or four defensive players. I'd say we need two fullbacks, a centre half, and a holding midfielder. Now, if we get into the Champions League, we may, with Champions League, decent wages, and Klopp, we may be in a position to start offering, signing the sort of players that we want, that we need, the players that drive a team forward. But we could easily look at spending £100 million on those four players easily.
I don't think we get a striker that Klopp wants this summer.
I think the striker the striker that Klopp wants is unattainable, because basically he wants Lewandowski.
Well,
Lewandowski is a phenom.
The one he wants that everyone talks about, and I'm not going to be an in the know bullshitter, but he wants Morata. If he can get him from Real Madrid.
Fucking hope, because I think Morata's shit.
He's not, man. He's really good.
I don't like him at all.
I think, but guys, to support Stu's point, not that I agree Morata's shit, but what I would say is, I think investing in Morata doesn't give you the incremental value to the targets you guys just set, compared to improving the defense in the way you said before. Yeah.
He seems to have made the decision. Every time we throw forward, we can score three or four goals. But in doing so, we can concede five goals. And he seems to have gone, look, this isn't working. We've got to revert back. We've got to drop 40 yards back and see if we can maybe score one goal but keep a clean sheet, or score two but only concede one.
I still think we score with our current players, because we've done it this year. I still think we score if you can get Mane, Coutinho and Firmino fit in the right positions. You can use Sturridge more intelligently if he were to stay, as in play him in the games that suits him, you know, rather than off the bench for 10 minutes, which is a waste of everyone's time.
Or in a two.
Or you can play maybe a system that suits Origi, or, you know, whatever you do with it, you need to just maybe consolidate in certain games and make your set piece work in both boxes stronger, because let's be honest, you know, we don't score enough goals from set pieces because our delivery is usually shit, and we don't attack the right way, and again, we don't defend the right way. So I think you need to fix the spine, you know, above all else. As much as fullbacks are important, I think Klopp is going to go for Sessegnon, as it seems, and he's a kid, and probably stick with Milner, which will mean we'll all be gouging our eyes out at some point or another next season. And he'll probably stick with Klein, who I think probably needs a rest as much as anything else, because what, has he almost played 100 games for Liverpool?
Oh, God, he's been run into the ground. He's one of the most loyal players we've had.
Milner, I have issues with, but he's been run into the ground as well.
Yeah,
and I think Trent Alexander-Arnold has scope. I think if we bought Sessegnon for the other side, he's got scope. So I think if Klopp works on younger fullbacks, that's okay with me. But I do want to see some experience, a bit more guile, just some quality, and maybe those players that come in. You know, I think we need 4 first team players, and then they'll relegate maybe some of our better players to squad roles. You know, or rotate a little bit more, because players like if Keita came in, then maybe we'd look at him rotating a little bit with Lallana in certain matches, or with Wijnaldum. And I'm all right with having Gini or Lallana on the bench occasionally. There's nothing wrong with that.
Yeah.
And that's the kind of thing you want. Even Coutinho or Firmino. Firmino's been running to the ground. I mean, all this criticism about his goal scoring. He's been played in and around wrong positions a lot of the time. He makes a lot more happen when he's in a central area. But even he, you know, he's never going to have... He's just been run his socks off into the ground. That January-February period where we didn't rotate, we didn't look to do anything different. I don't want that to happen again.
Look at Firmino. First three, 4 months of this season, he was on fire. He could have scored with his eyes closed. Then Christmas time comes and he couldn't have hit a cow's arse with a banjo. And we needed...
That's quite difficult, though.
not if you're sitting on the cow facing its arse.
I'm aware they thought about this.
Graphic, but, you know,
Stu, we've
run half the first team into the floor, and
yeah, we can't do that again.
So no, there comes a time when you've got to say Klein needs a rest. We're going to have to play Alexander Arnold
for 3 games and not just 1 rest. Do you know what I mean? Because that's the problem. It's these players come in, and unless they get injured, they get no sustained rest period, you know? And all he's doing is... I know some of the machines, I mean, Lallana's incredible. Chan, to an extent as well, he was carrying that injury all that time.
And we ran him into the fucking ground as well.
Well, I know, and that's the thing. It's about... trusting that your squad and your squad players are good enough to beat the opposition in front of them. I think Mane's and Coutinho in the first 3 months, Coutinho was running the show. There wasn't a better player in the league for 3 months, in my opinion. He just literally would dominate games. He would do everything. And you got Mane there on the end of it, just terrorising defences. Mane would make players look shit that are shit. Do you know what I mean? He would humiliate teams in the... you know, in the lower cups, in you know, lesser teams in the league, because he's that good and he's that confident in his own ability. I'm kind of sick of these players that we've got. Sick is a little bit strong, but I'm a bit tired of some of these players that I don't believe they're either good enough to wear the shirt, and you know, rightly or wrongly, or they don't believe in their own abilities. And I know a lot of players are confidence players and go through patches and form. But if we have a stronger spine of players, of a really confident... You look at Van Dijk, and everyone's saying no, no centre-back's worth 50 million. I think to us, he would be worth 50 million.
If he saves us 10 goals a season... Us.
Yeah.
If he saves us 10 goals a season...
Look at,
before this season, I said Ibrahimovic was a bit of a stupid transfer. The money they've paid, he scored, what, 28 goals? This
Something
season,
crazy for a 35-year-old.
Worth it. It was absolutely worth every penny. It would have been more worth it had they got in the Champions League, which they may or may not do. But if we bought Van Dijk and next season we conceded 10 or 15 goals less, it was worth it.
It would pay for itself.
And you don't instantly think, shit, we're going to get beaten by a 5.5-foot nobody at the back. It's worth it. If we just get that little bit of confidence... And don't
it's
look
the
at
quality he'd useless. Add as well. Yeah, and to be honest, the only time, and I'm not going into the Saka debate because I cannot be asked, only time Moreno ever looked like he'd get a game and look a player for me is when Saka was there, because he'd have natural balance on that left side defence. He was good in the one-on-one situations, and I think if you had someone like Van Dijk there, then maybe you can afford to have a younger kid at left back in certain games, because you've got a trusted centre back and you'd have a stronger partnership with him and Matip. Because Matip's good, but he does need some form of leading at times, and you'd have a better balance in defence. And if you've got a stronger spine and if you've got the quality there, you know, down the middle of your team, then I think The fullbacks are slightly more peripheral. I mean, look at us scoring those goals in the first half of the season. Our fullbacks contributed a bit, but not a lot. We didn't need them. Do you know what I mean? Yep. You know, they were there, but we didn't need them because our attack was so good. And I just think that was because everything was clicked into place. For some reason, the balance of Lallana in midfield with Wijnaldum and Henderson or Chan just worked. And that balance in midfield, Matip was really good in the first half of the season. And then, you know, that incredible attack, that was just great balance. And it was all about the balance and structure and the way we played football. And I think we can play that way again, but we need the right squad players to allow us to do that. Because
I was going to say, to that point, you're not wrong. And I do think it's important to acknowledge when plan A worked and when it worked for so long. We spend a lot of time on the defense. I want to talk a little bit of a different tangent around the attack. And it's interesting what you're saying, for example, around the lack of emphasis required on the fullbacks. Because I think, so I have a very sort of weird idea on the attack. And really, it comes down to two things. I actually want to pose this question to Stu for the first stab at it. Stu, I guess there's two observations to make from the attacking perspective. The one is, it remains over-reliant on one player, and we know who that player is. The second observation that I have is that, and it's interesting, you guys hinted at it as well, I just feel that this team needs more ability to have different ideas. One of the reasons, and I articulated it best in a podcast with John Buskell, one of the reasons that I'm very loath to get rid of Sturridge, even though I'm fully resigned to the idea that he'll leave anyway, is not because of some, you know, impassioned sort of plea around how he's been treated, but it's more on the fact that, you know, he offers something different, and the idea is that you should be able to have a squad that gives you different kinds of options to leverage. In other words, having the ability to call on different strategies to score goals. So whether it's from wide positions, whether it's from central positions, have a free kick specialist, have a penalty scorer who, yes, is going to, you know, scores what, 7 out of 8. That's a damn good record. But also, I mean, Rory, you mentioned this earlier as well. Be able to score corners. Like, have a thing. Like, maybe it's just me, but, you know, that annoying United team under Ferguson, if it didn't have goals, it always seemed to come up with a goal from a corner or from a direct free kick. And I just, I mean, it's maybe a bit sort of simplistic in my head, and if I'm wrong, that's fine. But I just feel like this. If your strategy is goals, if it's really about the heavy middle thing, then as far as I'm concerned, the team needs to be investing in goals in a very variety way, and the ability to score goals in different situations with different abilities. Because then, regardless of what's parked in front of you—a bus, a boat, or a hamster—you can annihilate whatever is in front of you. What's your thoughts on this, Stu? And disagree if you think I'm wrong, obviously.
No, I think you're right. We're the only team that I can think of in the top six that doesn't have a recognised forward. We spent the bulk of the season with Firmino up front, and he did a very, very good job, as we said before. Fatigue naturally settled in. I'm one of the people that wouldn't be too bothered if Sturridge goes, because I've got nothing against him. He seems like a nice guy. And when he's on his day, he's unplayable. You cannot defend against Sturridge when he's in one of those moods. But he's lost his pace. So I'm not convinced that he offers us what he used to offer us. But none of our forwards really offer us anything specifically. Sturridge used to be the pace. That's gone. Origi, when he first came in, looked like the strength. That seems to have gone. So I do agree with your point, but I think the problem there is, if we want to try and get multiple different types of forwards in, we're going to have to go out and buy them all. We're going to have to replace Sturridge with someone who's quick, replace Origi with someone who's strong. And as I said before, I think we've got more important things to spend the money on. We've got to work on the defence. We've got to work on being less of a pushover. Don't know if that's really answered your question.
No, it does. Rory, would you change aspects of that? Would you agree with it in full?
It's a difficult one because I think sometimes it's tactical setup. I think sometimes there are players on our team that that fit a certain way. I mean, we talked about Rigi, albeit briefly, and I just think he is a confidence player, and I think he's lacking confidence. And what Klopp did with him is he took him out of the limelight. He didn't put him in the matchday squad for quite a long time. To work with him on the training ground and to develop him and then brought him back in at the right time, and he had that great second half of the season. We haven't got that luxury anymore, unfortunately. We don't have a squad to allow for that, nowhere near. And I just want to get back to a point where maybe players, if they're playing badly, cannot be in the limelight as much. You know, we need to have the balance right where we can use players appropriately in the right games, because there are certain games where Sturridge, if he was available and chosen to play, and there's a lot of complexities around Sturridge, we know, but would blow teams off the pitch. I would still think he could do that. Not in his pace, but he's still incredible on the ball and his feet and movement. And I think the one thing Sturridge has not been offered this year is the chance to play in our full attack. He's not wanting to play with Mane and Firmino and Coutinho. So you can't always deny the fact that he's been put in the second string team when he's been starting, and that's not always great for players who are.
Has he not played with Mane and Firmino at all?
I don't think he's played with Mane at all. I genuinely don't. He might have had a couple of cup games early in the season, maybe Burton or Derby or something like that. But I really don't think he's had a lot of time.
Ironically, a similar argument can be made for Origi as well. I don't think, you know, yeah, both of them,
well,
haven't
had
been
time,
used to the best.
He's had time with Firmino and Coutinho, though, hasn't he, to an extent? I mean, he's got players around him, but they're just on a different wavelength. He doesn't seem to be remotely connected to them. Something about Mane, the way when Mane came in, he just seemed to blend everyone together. Do you know, he just seems to be the link man that we were missing. And I hate the last piece in the picture kind of, or in the puzzle kind of analogy and all that shit. But Mane did seem the right fit. He needs the right fit for the way we want to play. But if he's not there, then we do simply need to have someone else with pace, with confidence, with ability to make it hard for defence to defend, you know, because Mane's acceleration is the difference. It's not just his pace, which is unbelievable. He's the kind of player that would run so fast that he has to check his run because he's so quick that he's already run himself offside within 5 yards. He's just insanely quick. It's his acceleration that makes him the difference, and defenders just don't know how to play against that. I mean, he blew Spurs off the pitch with his pace. But we need, like you said, I think we need more intelligence, more guile. You know, City always missed David Silva, and I think when Coutinho's on his game, he's great. But I mean, look at City, they've got so many options. You know, Sane and Sterling and De Bruyne, and there's goals and there's options and ways of scoring goals. And Chelsea, you know, they bring Willian off the bench or Fabregas, or we don't really have that. You know, we don't have quality in reserve. We have quality in our first 11, 12, maybe 13 at a push, but they're never fully fit. Yeah. I think one of the things we really need to change is targeting the right kind of player who has a strong injury record. I think Mane's been unlucky, in fairness, because they, and Coutinho to an extent, because they were knocks. They were quite distinctly different from reoccurring injuries. But Oxlade-Chamberlain scares the life out of me, because the guy's been injured a lot from such a young age.
I agree.
And I think we've just got to look at players. You know, Suarez was an anomaly. He's a freak of nature. But there's got to be players out there, you know, that I've got a very strong background and lack of injury, you know, history, and maybe they do pick up a knock. But Ings was known for his problems at Burnley. He'd had 6 months off from an injury before, I'm sure he has, and that was always going to end in maybe one thing, you know. And we just can't keep doing that. We can't go through a season where our spine consists of, like him or not, if Lovren is part of that, Lovren and Henderson and Sturridge being part of our key spine that Klopp is picking, because they're not fit enough, you know, to play 30 games plus. You know, we can accommodate Lallana, who will miss maybe a 4-week period every now and again, but we can't accommodate Henderson, who misses 15 game stretches, or Sturridge to an extent, because I just don't know the injury problems. If we can't manage Sturridge correctly, you know, whatever happens there, then we can't do it. And the same with Lovren. I mean, his erratic injuries and Matip as well. We need reliability. We need consistency and continuity, and I think that's what I'd want to buy for. I'd want to buy the spine to replace those players with quality, with money, actual serious money, not just, you know, throw away. You know, we might spend 25 million here, even 20 million is nothing in today's game. You'll see players like, I don't know, you'll see clubs buy Benteke, Palace paying Benteke 100 grand a week, Crystal fucking Palace, who would go down are paying a striker 100k a week, and West Brom are looking at, you know, players of crazy quality, and Stoke signing players for 20 million and paying them 70, 80 grand a week. It's changed, you know. We're not going to be smarter. You can't outsmart the big teams anymore. They're just going to take advantage of you. So you need to go in and actually lay it down. And I don't want to spend 200 million on 12 players. If we're going to spend 200 million, we spend it on 5 or 6. You know, you spend it on the right kind of players. De Bruyne is probably one of the only players I've ever known that you could say would be worth 50 million, because he guarantees you a certain amount of goals and assists and contribution to the way you're going to play. Yeah. Mane was worth every penny for what we paid for him. It's rare that you get that, but I think if you get it right, then yeah, you're gonna bring in the kind of required quality that will take us on a level. And I think we all need to see that, because I think we need quality. You know, we've talked in this pod about Real Madrid's bench and Barcelona's at times, and even City's, and you know, United are going to spend 200 million even if they're not in Europe. I mean, City are going to spend 200 million on 4 players. Chelsea are going to spend money again because they have a very, very clever way of selling players to Brazil for like quadruple what they're worth. And, you know, they'll always find a way. I mean, Tottenham spent money last summer badly and they're still up there. So it's going to be difficult no matter what. I think Liverpool just need to realise that it's not all about bargain basement and bosmans and being clever, because we're not astute enough. We're not Juventus. We can't get players at the right age or on a free that are going to be perfect for us, because we're just not that kind of club. So we do need to change. So I think we will. But
okay, so let me sum it up, because I mean, all of this, believe it or not, informs beautifully the qualitative and quantitative targets we set. I know you guys are probably still trying to figure what the hell that means.
I know what it means.
Okay, so the target, very simply, Liverpool, because we know you're listening. Jurgen Klopp listens to this pod. I have it on good authority. Your target is mid-70s to 80s in points, fourth minimum, out of the group stage of the Champions League, third ideally, please, in the league. How are you going to do this? You're going to fix the spine. You're going to you're going to invest in defense and quality with good fitness records. You're going to get a deeper squad, not necessarily a bigger one. There's a big difference between deeper and bigger.
Yeah.
And you're going to use that deeper squad. You're not going to be reliant on one player, and you're going to invest in a variety of attacking strategies. There you are, ladies and gentlemen. There are the targets for Liverpool Football Club next season. Rory and Stu, before we close the show, it's time for the segment called Beat the Host. So, you guys know, you've followed me through the season. For those who haven't heard this before,
I've listened to these last two, and they have been the most outlandish, ridiculous questions I've ever heard any form of show ever.
Don't worry. This one is pretty simple. The question you guys are going to get is pretty simple. So, just quickly, for those who haven't heard, here I challenge my guests to make a prediction. 3 points go to the host or the guests who came closest to the actual answer. At the end of the season, there's going to be a bit of a tally, and that's going to actually inform a donation to a charity of the winning party's choice. I still have to make sure I win, so let's see how this goes. Recap, 2 weeks back, I asked Joe Cousins and Jason Roberts, if I was to take the minutes at which each goal is scored and add them up, what is the value I'll get in respect to the game between Liverpool and Southampton? For example, if goals are scored in minute 2 and minute 90, I'd have received the value 92. I bet 107, Jason bet 149, Joe the cynical bastard bet 0, and he won. Joe bet 0, he wins.
Cynicism always wins.
That was spot on. So he nailed it. Goalless draw, 3 points for the guest then, which updates the overall score to host 20, guest 17. The pressure's on, because I need to make sure I at least get a point. The final bet of the season. Liverpool's last match of the season will be against Middlesbrough. Gentlemen, how many minutes will pass before the first foul? Rory.
Three.
Stu.
One and a half.
90 yeah. seconds. Marco's
I
going...
think it's going to be a shithouse match.
Okay. I'm going to go
They're
for seven.
Kick seven changes shit out of us, aren't they?
Yes.
They're going down so they could easily take a couple of bans in this game.
I've gone for seven. I've gone brave. I'm thinking it's going to be a very tepid start.
You're losing. It's fine.
That's fine. Okay, guys. This was a fantastically fun show. Thank you so much, both of you. Very quickly, plugs. Rory, from you.
We did a really fun Guardians preview. I would just plug the film if you haven't gone to see it. Oh, yes. What is wrong with you? But no, it's a great film. We are going to be back doing a review in a couple of weeks. I'm writing a review, which I like, but it's hard to write because I'm a bit rusty. And we've got a couple of other good pods coming up. We've got a Wonder Woman preview while I'll be away. We're doing an Ant-Man pod, some belatedly next week, but that'll be fun. Check out AI Comic Pod, and we appreciate all the interaction and love and support we get on that format.
Fantastic. Stu, any plugs from you? Probably similar, but...
Same really. We're recording the Ant-Man review on the 15th. Then the two of us are actually going to watch Guardians again on the 19th. Then we're going to be doing.
Yeah, we'll get you over on the gag copter. We'll get you over, mate.
And then we're going to after that we're doing the review of Guardians of the Galaxy the following Monday.
Can't wait for that.
And then Joseph Connors and I are going to be doing a Wonder Woman preview. Last Monday of May, and then he and I are going to do another comics, an actual comic look at. We're going to do a look at Batman in the DC Rebirth line sometime start of June, so that'll be really good. We're overdue another comic issue.
Fantastic. Well, what I'm going to plug is a bit unusual. I'm going to plug what's going to happen in 2 weeks' time. In 2 weeks' time, there's going to be a season review, a formal season review pod. I've got a very special guest lined up for that. It's going to be a 2-hour special, divided into two parts. I'll see what happens if the guys publish it all together or sort of staggered. We're going to go through some player ratings. We're going to give away some awards. We're going to talk about transfers. But yeah, please keep an eye out for that because hopefully it gives you some nice, content to listen to in respect to the review. Rory, thank you. Stu, thank you. Listeners, thank you very much. That was the Anfield Index podcast. Bye for now.
Network.